Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City University of New York. He is the best-selling author of a number of books on physics, and he's a frequent guest on national and international television. And we're talking about his new book, Quantum Supremacy, How the Quantum Computer Revolution Will Change Everything. Professor, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, glad to be on the show with you.
Now, this book starts out, you talk about 2019-2020. Two groups announced that they had achieved quantum supremacy. And I bet 99% of the people out there heard that and then just went on to the next thing, not realizing how significant that announcement was. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Computer power has gone through three stages. Each time, civilization itself was turned upside down. The first stage was when we had analog computers, computers based on gears, levers, pulleys. You turn the crank, and it added and subtracted for you. That's phase one. Phase two was World War II, when we started to use electricity, and circuits could either be on or off, and that's binary. And so binary computers helped to crack the German code. And the reason why we're speaking English today rather than German is in part due to the fact that we entered the second era of computers. Now we're entering the third era. Silicon Valley could be left in the dust. Silicon Valley could be a rust belt, because we're now entering the third era, which is quantum computers. Computers that compute on atoms. That is the ultimate computer. You cannot get any computer power smaller than an atom.
Or faster.
Or faster. We're talking about a computer that is perhaps a million times faster than an ordinary digital computer that used to occupy a whole floor of a building. Now you can put that in your pocket.
Jeez.
But even then, we can put a million of those inside a quantum computer. And so we're not talking about computers that can compute on atoms and molecules. And that's going to revolutionize medicine. It's going to revolutionize agriculture, energy production, you name it. It's going to turn civilization upside down.
But the first place to achieve this is going to be head and shoulders above everybody else.
That's right.
There's like a race on to achieve this.
That's right. There's a race. The leaders of the race are the Chinese and the Americans, especially companies like IBM. They are racing to bring to market quantum computers that you can begin to do real calculations with. Now, of course, there are problems, and that's why we don't have full-blown quantum computers today. But in the coming years, you're going to see more and more headlines advertising that more and more billions of dollars are being invested by the nations of the world, in China and the United States especially, to seize the high ground.
Yeah.
Other words, to make sure that the third wave of computer technology is used for peaceful purposes.
One of the biggest problems is because they are so powerful, they're going to be able to solve major encryption. They're going to be able to break the 128-bit AES encryption.
That's right.
So if the first people that get this are literally going to be able to break every code in the world.
That's right. So who's worried about this? CIA, the FBI, the federal government, they're all watching this very carefully. Because anyone who can have power, you know, a million times greater than that of a conventional computer can break any digital code. I mean, think about that. All your transactions, the transactions of billion-dollar corporations, trade secrets, the secrets of nations, secret cables between different nations, all these things are protected by codes. But here's a quantum computer that can break any digital code. And so it's giving headaches for the CIA.
I understand how the Chinese, and by the way, the organization was the Chinese Academy of Science, the Institute, the Quantum Innovation Institute at the Chinese Academy of Sciences. And I know that they're on top of this. I worry about whether the United States has invested in this enough.
Well, Right now, we have computers at Honeywell and Google and IBM. We're betting on cooling down circuits to near absolute zero,
right,
where vibrations are minimized in terms of eliminating defects in the front of the computer. The Chinese are investing in optical computers. Their computers are based on laser beams. Instead of beams of electricity, they use beams of light, laser beams, to do calculations. And it's still too early to see which group is going to succeed, the optical computers, laser computers of the Chinese, or the more conventional electronic computers here in the United States. But the race is on. People know what the prize is. The ultimate prize is to dominate the world economy. I mean, think about it. Dominate the world economy.
Now, I want to mention for the benefit of the audience that you explain everything in depth in this book, including the entire history of quantum theory and quantum mechanics. And you do need that to fully understand what's going on. But we don't have time to do that here. But please read the book and you'll get all that information. So let's just talk about a couple of things. Let's talk about Moore's Law and quantum computers.
All right. Well, we're used to the fact that every Christmas, computers are roughly twice as powerful as they were the previous Christmas. That's why you update. That's what keeps the industry going. This multi-billion dollar industry keeps going because everyone wants the latest, the most powerful game-playing computer around. But that's flattening out. Why? Because we're beginning to have transistors the size of atoms. The smallest nodule inside your laptop is about 5 to 10 atoms across. Once you cross that barrier, electrons can leak out because you don't know where the electrons are anymore. That's the quantum principle. And you get leakage taking place, and it burns up a tremendous amount of heat. The computer melts. And so between the computer short-circuiting and melting, Moore's Law comes to an end. This is happening now. When you look at the curve of ever-increasing computer power, it's flattening out now.
Wow.
We predicted this years ago. We
figured
this new, that this is going to happen, and now it's happening before our eyes. Next year's computers are not going to be twice as powerful as last year's computer. Sorry about that.
Let's talk about why we haven't achieved quantum supremacy. When you start dealing at the atomic level, at the particle level, the world changes dramatically from the world that we're used to.
Right. The world that we're used to seeing around us is actually not the real world that exists inside our bodies, inside a medical laboratory, inside chemical reactions. We see only a very small average of what happens at the molecular level. But you see, what happens is the slightest vibration can upset a delicate atomic calculation. And that's why you don't trust these results until you drop the temperature down to near absolute zero.
Yeah.
And that's tricky. And so the race is to get computers that can calculate near absolute zero, to calculate reliably, to have them have tremendous amounts of what are called qubits, which is a measurement of how much computer power you have. That's what the race is all about. Billions, hundreds of billions of dollars are being invested by all the major companies are aware of this, and all of them have a group that is working on these quantum computers.
What's the problem with decoherence?
Okay, what happens is a laser beam, for example, we know that all the light beams oscillate in unison.
Mm.
That's why lasers are so powerful. All the light beams go up and down in sync. That's called coherence, okay? Incoherence is what we see around you today. The light around you is incoherent. It's a big jumble. All the frequencies mesh with all the other frequencies. It's just a real mess. So quantum computers have to be coherent to do a calculation. That's why you have to cool it down to near absolute zero. And that's why historically people thought that quantum computers were impossible. They thought, what? Prevent atomic oscillations and noise from preventing a calculation? Impossible. But we do it now. So computer power is measured in qubits. That is the number of zeros and ones, and everything in between that you can put together. We used to be happy with 5 qubits. With 5 qubits, you can multiply 3 times 5 is 15. That was a breakthrough.
I remember
it was
that.
Done on atoms. It was done on atoms. 3 times 5 is 15. That calculation was done atomically. That made headlines.
Wow.
Now we're up to 1,000 qubits.
Wow.
Think about that.
I know.
Just within the last few decades, we're up to a few thousand qubits, and we hope to get up to 1,000,000 qubits within this decade.
Now, the kinds of things that a quantum computer will play a major role in, and you talk about these at end in this book, are really fascinating and very varied. For instance, a lot of people might not understand how quantum computers could be useful in cancer medicine. Can you talk about that?
Right. You realize that our body is in some sense a quantum computer because it does calculations at the atomic level. Okay, cancer is a disease at the atomic level, and that's one of the reasons why it's very difficult to cure, because our computers fail at the atomic level. Our computers can only do zeros and ones, zeros and ones, zeros and ones. They cannot do a half, a third, a fourth. Everything is zero on and off, zeros and ones, zeros and ones. Cancer is not like that. Cancer is at the molecular atomic level, and that's where the quantum computer lives. It lives in the quantum realm. Therefore, you can do calculations that are impossible to do on a digital computer. Let me repeat that statement again. You can do calculations that are impossible on a digital computer, but you can do it on a quantum computer because these calculations are all quantum mechanical. So zeros and ones, that's how digital computers compute. But atoms and electrons are waves, waves that don't care about zeros and ones, zeros and ones. Waves that could be a half, a third, a fourth, or whatever. And that's why quantum computers are infinitely more powerful than digital computers, which can only do zeros and ones.
Jeez. Is there going to, how far away are we from with something called quantum medicine, that there'll actually be a title called quantum medicine?
Well, I think the first groundwork is being laid right now. For example, take a look at Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, you write about that in the book extensively.
Right, Alzheimer's disease was a big mystery as to how it could. How is it possible that some people could have brains that are totally gummed up with what are called amyloid proteins, a gummy substance, and yet are clear thinking? Therefore, amyloid proteins, this gum in the brain, cannot be the reason why we have Alzheimer's, because people with Alzheimer's, some of them have. Some of them don't have this gummed-up protein. Now we realize that there are at least two types of amyloid proteins, depending upon the way they spin. In other words, the way they hook together to form spirals of atoms. They can be clockwise or counterclockwise. One of them causes Alzheimer's. The other one doesn't. That could be the end of the mystery as to why some amyloids can cause your brain to gum up, and some amyloid proteins do not cause your brain to gum up. And how do we tell the difference? Quantum computers. Quantum computers can tell the difference between atoms that spin clockwise or spin counterclockwise. Digital computers cannot, because they compute with zeros and ones, zeros and ones. And so we think there's going to be a breakthrough in medicine. Plus, how do you test pharmaceuticals? You test pharmaceuticals by putting them in a petri dish by the thousands, hitting them with the bacteria, and then just letting them grow. And by chance, some of these substances will kill bacteria, and by chance, other ones won't. It's hit or miss. That's how we find new drugs. With quantum computers, we can simulate the process, the chemical process, in the memory of a computer and do away with all this slow testing one by one, which is how we find new drugs today. In other words, this could revolutionize everything.
You write about it, the fact that it's going to be able to work on the structure of proteins. And that might not sound like something very complicated to the average listener, but all you need to do is pick up a journal of science like Nature or Science itself. And I marvel at these structures of proteins that they've figured out so much. They look like they're insanely complicated. But for a quantum computer, this is going to be nothing at all.
Right, because that's what quantum computers do. Quantum computers compute on quantum atoms. So to think that zeros and ones, digital, can mimic the wave patterns of complex molecules. It's ridiculous. Molecules are much more complex than zeros and ones. They're waves. Waves are very complicated configurations that give you molecules. And that's why quantum computers have a head start, because our bodies are quantum mechanical. Our bodies are made out of electron waves. Our bodies are not made out of digital. And so that's why you can do calculations on a quantum computer that could never, I repeat, never be done on a digital computer. This is going to leave digital computers in the dust.
Yeah, they'll be obsolete. They'll be obsolete.
Just like the abacus. You know, the abacus is a quaint device that is used in Asia. But who uses abacuses anymore? That's 1,000 years ago. So people will look at the digital computer like we view the abacus, a very quaint device to do silly calculations.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Dr. Michio Kaku. He's a professor of theoretical physics at City University of New York. He's the author, a best-selling author of a number of books on physics, frequent guest on national and international television, and we're talking about his new book. It's a must-read. You should know if this is going to happen. Quantum Supremacy, How the Quantum Computer Revolution Will Change Everything. Now, the thing that I worry about the most in quantum computers is the merger of AI and quantum computers, because I think that could lead into weird places.
Agreed. Now, I think what happens is that there's a lot of attention being played to chatbots.
Oh, yeah.
A chatbot is something that you can talk to, and it spits out a paragraph. It spits out an essay. College students love it, because when they want to do a book report on Shakespeare, you simply talk to it, and it spits out an essay on Shakespeare.
This is happening already to a scary extent.
Right. But you have to realize that it could spit out nonsense. It has no understanding of true and false. It just takes snippets from the Internet, random snippets from the Internet all over the place, splices them together, and that's your term paper for college. That's how you graduate from college now, right?
But they're getting really good at it. They're getting very good at it.
Right, because they're getting good at taking bits and pieces of existing essays about Shakespeare. But let's say someone writes a comical essay that is totally false from beginning to end about Shakespeare. The computer doesn't know that it's fake.
Right.
The computer simply assumes that it's real, like all the other essays that it's copying from, splices them together, and comes up with garbage. And so that's one of the problems with chatbots. It does not know the difference between what is correct and what is incorrect,
but
what is true and what is fake.
But let's add quantum computers to this.
Quantum computers can then start to look at whether or not certain statements are correct or not. Now, that, of course, takes a lot of brain power. You just can't BS a paper on Shakespeare and assume that certain historical references are correct. You have to do a little bit of research or conspiracy theories. You have to do research to evaluate what is correct and what is not correct. Chatbots can't do that. All chatbots do is take bits and pieces from the Internet and splices them together. That's all they do. And, of course, it sounds like a human wrote it, because a human did write it.
Right.
A human wrote all the bits and pieces, different humans, of course, and the computer simply splices them together and gives you an essay. That's how you can pass the bar exam today. These essays are so good now, you can pass the bar exam using a chatbot. But the chatbot cannot tell you if what you are copying is total garbage or not, or racist, or insulting, or degrading. It doesn't know. All it does is it splices together bits and pieces that it found on the Internet, period. This is where quantum computers can come in. Because quantum computers can say, now, wait a minute. I did a background check on this. 90% of your term paper is upside down, backwards, and wrong.
Is it possible that quantum computing combined with AI could start to achieve consciousness?
Well, already we are thinking about putting the two together, because, you see, quantum computers gives you firepower.
Yeah.
It's a question of hardware. We're not computing on transistors anymore. We're computing on atoms. That's hardware. And so quantum computer gives you muscle, while AI is a learning device. it gets you better and better after every iteration. So it's a software thing. So software advances are being done in artificial intelligence to make them smarter and smarter every generation. Well, quantum computers is a hardware question. How much firepower do you have? How much muscle do you have to do a very long calculation? You put them together, and that's going to be the future. The future will be a merger of artificial intelligence with quantum computers.
Amazing. There's so much interesting stuff in this book. But at the end, there's a section called quantum puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, does that capture your imagination. One of the problems is the universe a simulation? And a lot of people may hear that and go, what? But that is a theory. A theory is that we're living in nothing more than a simulation.
Yes, the theory, I think, is wrong, but you really have to think hard to figure out why is it wrong. You see, the atoms in your room, how many atoms are there in your living room right now?
Yeah.
About 10 to the 25. That's one with 25 zeros after it. That's how many molecules there are inside your living room. To calculate the motion of all these atoms, 10 to the 25 power, would exhaust any known digital computer. And when you go to quantum computers, the number of configuration of waves is infinite, because waves can have all sorts of intermediate values between zeros and one. Therefore, no mechanical device can simulate something as simple as the weather or something as simple as the atoms inside your living room. However, we can get close to it, but you can never attain the full amount. And think of the butterfly effect. The butterfly effect is when a butterfly flaps its wings, it sets off a cascade, a small cascade of flutter that under certain circumstances can be magnified by hitting other flutters of vibrations to create a storm. You're at the tipping point. A storm is just about to form, and a butterfly flaps its wing to tip it into a storm. But it could have tipped it the other direction, too. How do you tell? It's calculational. And that's why I don't think that you can predict the weather. I don't think you can predict the future events of what Keanu Reeves is going to do next. It's just calculation is too difficult for a computer.
You're right about Keanu Reeves, I have to say. But with quantum computing, I would say that that'd be an incredible tool for weather forecasting.
To a degree. It would give you probabilities approaching 100, but never hitting 100%. So you would get very accurate weather predictions up to just, 4 or 5 days. But after that, it starts to, the uncertainty starts to build up. So it's an improvement. But already, when they predict the path of a hurricane, have you ever noticed when they predict the path of a hurricane hitting Florida, they have like 5 or 6 trajectories.
Yeah, they have 5 or 6 models that vary tremendously. And then there's usually a lot of them convening in a middle path.
Right. And the reason for that, of course, is uncertainty. You're dealing with trillions upon trillions of molecules that can, bump this way or bump that way. So you have to make approximations. And so here's a simple example of the limits of what a digital computer can do. And a quantum computer makes it worse, because quantum mechanically, atoms can do even more gyrations than in a classical computer. So that's why I think that the matrix is not in our future. We can get close to it, but we can never get the matrix. Sorry about that.
Is the universe a quantum computer then? It's not?
Well,
is that what you're betting?
That's a debate. For example, photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is a quantum event. It happens with photons of light hitting chlorophyll and causing it to activate. But you see, that happens at room temperature. So in other words, in some sense, Mother Nature has created a quantum computer that computes at room temperature. We can't do that yet. In other words, Mother Nature is smarter than us. We have to use liquid helium and vacuum pumps and a whole array of low-temperature devices to get a quantum computer to work. Mother Nature does it for free with photosynthesis every time a flower blossoms. So we're still behind Mother Nature.
That's good to know.
In other words, Mother Nature is the ultimate quantum mechanical genius. She's behind all the quantum mechanics that makes life possible. Life is quantum mechanical.
Do you foresee, and this would be in probably the far future, that quantum computers would be made so that they could be owned by an individual or a house? Like in the beginning, I remember regular digital computers, you know, were huge things, and now you can hold one in your hand. Is it possible that the individuals are going to be able to own quantum computers?
I think what's going to happen is that in the cloud, you're going to have gigantic quantum computers that exist at near absolute zero and so on and so forth. And let's say in your contact lens, your contact lens is a node that connects to the cloud. So by blinking, you can access not just the Encyclopedia Britannica in its entirety, but by blinking, you can actually access the human body and all the chemistry and the atoms and molecules inside the human body. So I think that in the future, quantum computers will be in the cloud. But the access to these quantum computers you'll have by blinking or whatever device you want to use to communicate with the cloud.
How far away do you think we are from the quantum revolution?
Well, it's going faster than we thought. Yeah. Who would have thought we would be up to 1,000, about 1,000 qubits? Every year, IBM and Google and so on and so forth announce yet another breakthrough on this, because this is the hottest field right now, and they don't want to be left in the dust. I mean, you know, they saw what happened to IBM years ago when the PC was coming along. IBM thought that the PC was just an anomaly, just a quirk, right? Boy, were they wrong. They're not going to make that same mistake twice.
No, okay? I don't think so. My guest tonight has been Dr. Michio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at City University of New York, the best-selling author of a number of books on physics, frequent guest on national and international television. We've been talking about his new book, which has got so much more in it, including an entire history of quantum theory done in a way that you could understand. Quantum Supremacy, How the Quantum Computer Revolution Will Change Everything. Professor, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to be on.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.